everybody, and welcome to another episode of React Native Radio. This week on our panel, we have James Brenton.
Hey, guys.
I'm Charles Max Wood from DevChat.tv. And this week, we have a special guest, and it's Mike Grabowski. Mike, do you want to introduce yourself? Say hello.
Hello, everybody. Mike here. Nice to be back on the React Native Radio after, I guess, 2 years now. I'm a React Native developer and core contributor to the framework as well. And I'm running ColdStack. I'm CTO there, so doing a lot of crazy stuff with React Native on a daily basis. That's about me.
A couple of years ago, I put out a survey asking people what topics they wanted us to cover on DevChat.tv, and I got two overwhelming responses. One was from the JavaScript community. They wanted a React show. And the other one was from the Ruby community, and they wanted an Elixir show. So we started both. The React show, though, is React Roundup. And every week, we bring in people from the React community, and we have conversations with them about React, about the community, about open source, about what goes into React, how to build React apps, and what's going on and changing in the React community. So if you're looking to keep current on the current React ecosystem and what's going on in React, you definitely need to be checking out React Roundup. You can find it at reactroundup.com. Awesome. Yeah, you used to be a panelist on this show way back in the day.
Yeah, that's true. Actually, I'm using the mic that I bought the other day just for this particular podcast. So I'm treating this episode as probably a good way to say that's going to be my, coming back. We'll see how it goes. It has been always a challenge to find a right time between us in Europe and you guys over in US. But I appreciate this afternoon time here in Europe. That's a very good timing for us.
Yep, absolutely. Well, yeah, you're 6 or 7 hours ahead of me, but you and James should be about the same time zone since he's over in Europe as well.
Yeah, it's going to be an hour, I think, right?
Yeah.
Yep. Good deal. Well, the thing that I have, at least that I went and looked at, was this Ultimate Guide to React Native Optimization ebook, and now you have my email so you can market stuff to me. Do you want to just kind of give us the 10,000 foot view on what we're looking at here?
Yeah. So, the idea started that we wanted to share some knowledge about React Native, some of the best practices that we have gathered over the course of past years working for our clients. And the idea was that I was supposed to write, this very, very short article being like, here are some of the quick wins that you can get out of React Native right now. And they wanted me to write some of the quick best practices that I got in my mind. That was part of the, marketing campaign that we had. And so the funny thing is that I never liked writing articles. I kind of hated that. I wasted like so much time on trying to write the correct wording. I'm not a native speaker, so writing in English is not the thing that I enjoy that much. And so the funny thing is that after not writing anything for like half a year, I sat down and I started writing this article. And it ended up being 120 pages. And, after 1 week, I was like, let's just make it a guide because we always wanted one. We always wanted to create a PDF ebook for everybody. And it's just hard to me to shrink down everything to one article because there's just so many things we want to share. So at the end of the day, this ended up being a collection of like some of the things that we find interesting these days as far as React Native. And it's been created by me and some of the developers here at ColdStack. Depending on the topic. So it's not that I'm kind of, knowing everything inside out as far as the ebook. Actually, I work with a lot of developers of ColdStack on some of the topics, sharing their findings from project work. So at the end of the day, if you are getting started with React Native, I guess the takeaway here is that you will find there, some of the tips and tricks that will help you get started better, that will help you understand some of the challenges that people have these days and understand why certain things are working the way they're working.
That's really interesting, man. I can't wait to have a listen to, or at least a read of that for sure. There must be one thing in there that's like, this is the one thing I want you to take away from this book. Could you pick something out?
There's probably a lot of them, but one thing that I like about this ebook, and one thing that actually made me very, very nervous about it at the same time was that I thought it might be just too simple. for people, you know? Because every time you're about to write something technical, there is this pressure that it should be very technical, that it should be very deep, that it should cover everything inside out, and that you should use very, very technical English, and it should sound very, very, clever. So I took sort of the other approach. While we wanted to tackle the challenges, I also wanted to share the background. So for example, when we are talking about things such as the architecture of React Native or some asynchronous communication or the bridge, we are actually describing how React Native works under the hood and why is this so important. So when I'm talking in the ebook about Turbo modules or the upcoming Re architecture, I'm not just getting very excited about it, but I'm also sharing context on how things look today. So the takeaway from me for anybody who's reading the ebook right now would be to finish reading the ebook and be like, I finally understand how everything works, and here's the thing that I've been missing, you know, how React Native works under the hood. Yeah. So that's what I would like everybody to understand, because that will give you much better understanding of everything that is happening around you in the React Native community.
Oh, I'm very excited to hear you say both of those things, because actually I think when you really understand how something is working beneath you, that's when you can really start to exploit everything that it does. And I cannot tell you how many articles I have read which have been ruined by kind of just an egotistical technicality to them, where people are just desperate to write something that sounds tremendously technically involved, but it just makes it impenetrable. I use React Native quite a lot, but I don't consider myself an expert and actually a comfortable guide. That's exactly what I'm looking for. So I'm really excited to download that myself and have a read.
Yeah, actually, I would say I'm on the same boat as you. You know, on a daily basis, I would say I'm doing 80% of management as a CTO of a company. I'm doing a lot of paperwork and strategy planning and all sorts of different things. And obviously, open source work, but at the same time, being challenged with, you know, writing an ebook is a good opportunity for me to kind of refresh my memories and be like back to the roots, trying to understand, you know, how was it like 3 or 4 years ago when I was writing my first React Native app, and try to write that knowledge down. So I quite appreciate that exercise as well. I think, you know, by sharing the knowledge, you can also learn and become a better developer. So I think that was a very great exercise for me as well.
So you put all your secrets into this book. What are they? Like, what? Usually what I find is there are usually a handful of things that are kind of the big wins, right? It's you do this, you're probably, you know, going to get, you know, pretty good bang for your buck. You do this other thing and maybe one or two of these other things. And then you start getting diminishing returns, right? Then it's just, you know, you're just adding that extra polish to get a couple extra milliseconds off of whatever you're doing with your performance. So what's kind of the big one, two, maybe three things where people can just get in and go,
yeah,
oh, if I do that, it's going to make my life better.
Well, I wouldn't say that I put everything like the secret sauce into the ebook. I think when I was writing down the chapters or the topics, I was like, what is it that makes me excited about React Native today, and what I would like to learn if I was just getting started. So these are not the ultimate things. Like generally speaking, these are ultimate things in my opinion, obviously. So if you get to read an ebook from somebody else, it is very likely, and I'm more than certain that it's gonna be the case, that the points that they're gonna be focusing on are going to be slightly different. So. I think that actually everything is really exciting about this ebook, and I'm now just trying to figure out which one is the most interesting to me. I would say because I'm just looking at the list of those things as we speak. For me, the one of the interesting pieces of the ebook is that, because there are those three groups. So I can probably pick one from each group. However, one of the most exciting ones for me is the dependency management with auto linking, and that's in the group where we describe the latest React Native features. And while this is not a technically something that you can read and implement, because this is more of a, you know, here's how the things are working, I find it quite useful for developers to understand how native code works with React Native and JavaScript part of things and how dependency management works. Because back in the day, there used to be React Native Link and everything used to be kind of a pain in the ass to set up, but at least it was explicit. So you were running the command and you knew when it broke. Today, everything is kind of happening behind the scenes. So if you are just starting out, you might be thinking that things work magically, which is not the case. So being able to understand what is auto-linking and more importantly, why we even created auto-linking and why we even created linking 3 years ago and what was the problem in the first place. This is quite handy knowledge that people will probably appreciate. So that's one thing. That's one thing for sure. And then I'd say I'm very, very, very excited about the animations and kind of trying to figure out the right balance between native and React Native. So we described some of the optimizations that you can do with animations and then how the animations are working, what are the libraries today, et cetera, and how this is related to the new React architecture. So that would be the second thing. And the third thing is the CI/CD setup. I'm the infrastructure guy. I love setting up CI/CDs and having everything automated. And unfortunately, every time we are joining a React Native project, that there is something we can improve. So I think that showing more of kind of real world cases, how we can set up Circle CI and automate things is a very, very useful thing for people to understand. So I'd say these are the things that I'm particularly interested about. But as I said, because this ebook has this sort of undefined format that I just put down things that I had in my head, everybody will have their own list of top three picks because there's just so many of them that it was even hard to group them together. Because it's not that we were following any pattern there. I was just like, what is it in my brain and what is it brain of everybody else here in this room that I would like to share with the people? And everybody was like this and that. That's how we ended up making the list of the things.
Wow, there's some really interesting topics on that list in that case.
Oh yeah, that's for sure. Depending on where you are today and what is it that you would try to build, then obviously you may find something different. You may take something different out of it. For example, the first section, which is the improving performance by understanding React Native implementation details. So the sort of the whole point of this section is to kind of give you a heads up that in order to write React Native apps and make them fast, if you understand how things work, if you think the React Native way or the React way, the declarative way, then it will be much easier for you to make your app faster. Many times people are, afraid or complaining that their animations are not smooth, that something is not working properly. They are blaming React Native for that. Where the reality is that there are small changes that they can make to their application, such as, pay attention to how many times your user interface re-renders, or be careful how you handle state, or don't choose native libraries where they are not necessary, or don't pollute the main thread or the bridge where you're having an animation, et cetera, et cetera. So there are certain, I would say, do's and don'ts that if you are aware of them, then building React Native apps will be easier for you. So the reality is that, I was always saying that in order to build a React Native application, you have to know how to build things. That's one thing. But also the other thing is that you have to know and be comfortable with working around things. Because there's going to be some challenges down the road that you will just not be able to fix, or some issues that you will not have time to resolve. You have to be aware why things are breaking and be like, I'm just going to change my layout, or I'm just going to change this button to something else, and I'm just going to move on.
Yeah, that's really true.
So that's the focus of this group, like some of the things that will help you detect such scenarios in a in production and be like, whatever, I'm just gonna change things and I'll move on, So that's how I would describe the first group.
One thing that I want to touch on real quick is with a lot of these things, and I think in that first group you actually had something in there about make sure you're loading 60 frames per second. And that made me think, okay, So how fast is fast enough? Because it's not just the frame rate. It's also how long does it take to load the app? How long does it take to load each view or page or however you want to think about it? Tab? I don't know. So yeah. So how do you measure that?
Well, that's a good question. If I should be honest with you, most of the time I'm just using my perception to judge if the app is loading properly. If it's loading properly, then I'm usually happy with that. Of course, we have some patterns that we apply to building interfaces, such as, you know, we would try to show preloaders or show the not the full real interface like on Facebook. When you're visiting the page, you will see a fake post widget that will have that will be like grayed out.
Like a preloaded skeleton.
Like the preloading widget part of the interface that is there, that is occupying the space, but it's not yet filled in with the data. So that's one thing. So it really boils down to kind of painting early and then loading those things async. So that's how we approach these things by default, and then we don't have issues such as the interface is just frozen or maybe it takes long time to show something. It's usually that we kind of have this distributed approach to, I would say, including preloaders here and there in the app. But you know, the 60 frames per second is more of a buzzword here, I would say. I just wanted to emphasize that you should really, really take care of how you animate things on screen. And I have this very, very interesting story here that we can also share with the Pixel Club and the podcast, which is about building a media player with React Native. When I was developing React Native apps full-time, that's been 2 years ago, I think, I was working on a media player in React Native. You can think about it as recreating Spotify in React Native. And so the client came to us and they had a native application that they did before. It was one of the leading mobile agencies in Europe that did the app for them. And the application was completely like not working flawlessly. It was laggy, it was eating memory. The root cause and the problem was that it was a media player that was displaying music notes. And the music notes were put on the music sheet, and that was a SVG file. That was 5 megabytes. And so what is the most efficient way to display an SVG? Use a browser for that. So native developers that hated JavaScript, that hated React Native, had to use a browser inside it. And so they recreated something that I called a React Native like solution, where they had a browser inside and they were asynchronously sending instruction to that browser to move the SVG to the left, to the right, to highlight a node, et cetera, et cetera. So a list of imperative instructions. At the end of the day, that didn't work quite well. That was obviously consuming a lot of memory and was having problems with syncing. Especially if you think about incoming calls or interruptions and a lot of different events that can happen. And so we started working in React Native in order to re-implement that. And everybody was like, is this going to be the time when we say React Native is not going to work out? Everybody was, you know, curious at that time, what is the boundary where we can push React Native? That was the moment where everybody was trying to show what is it that we can build with React Native and where is the line. And so what we did was only possible thanks to the understanding of the framework and how things were working. We actually created the same thing in React Native. We had a web view that had the SVG inside, and we had a React Native component where was the logic. The only difference was that we used animated view with native driver, and we interpolated time of a song to the position of the SVG. So we described ahead of time what is the left position of the SVG in relation to the time of a song. And having that interpolation relation let us just do everything at a single time, because It was the time of a song that controlled everything, including highlighted nodes, including position of the SVG, including, you know, elements that you saw on screen. So if you were forward, seeking forward or backwards, or maybe you restarted or somebody called you, you always knew that your interface is going to look exactly like you wanted because you have the animated driver and you have the interpolation of one value to the other. So the takeaway here is that it was possible with React Native to do something that native engineers couldn't do, because we were just aware of this very, very little technical characteristic of animated library and of interpolation that let us run at 60 frames per second, even on Android. So the takeaway here is that, you know, these things are possible, especially with animation, if you just pay a bit of attention to how the libraries that you're interacting with are implemented. And in this case, you know a bit of maths, which is which was the challenge for me, actually, because I didn't know what's extrapolation by that time. But, you know, if you pay enough attention to this and maybe use a bit of Wikipedia and Wolfram Alpha, then, you know, you can do it.
When I'm building a new product, G2i is the company that I call to help me find a developer who can build it. G2i is a hiring platform run by engineers that matches you with React, React Native, GraphQL, and mobile developers that you can trust. Whether you are a new company building your first product or an established company that wants additional engineering help, G2i has the talent you need to accomplish your goals. Go to g2i.co to learn more about what G2i has to offer. In my experience, G2i has linked me up with experienced engineers that can fit my budget. And the G2i staff are friendly and easy to work with. They know how product development works and can help you find the perfect engineer for your stack. Go to g2i.co to learn more about G2i.
That is quite the success story. We had, I think it's Caitlin Moran on a few weeks ago to talk about animation as well. And he was talking about React Native Animated as a library that seems to be really popular. I wanted to actually ask you, just building on that in that case, in terms of UI libraries, did you, let's just say for that example you just gave about the animation, was everything done without any kind of additional libraries? Did you just do it with React Native Animated, or did you rely on anything external to help sort of a, as an assist for that?
No, it was all done in React Native Animated, so in the with the animated.
Nice.
The structure was very simple. Let me just quickly break it down. I can't actually draw here on the screen. I can't show it to you, but it was very simple. It was the pattern that I don't know how it's called. I call it the controller pattern where the component, where your React Native component becomes a controller of something. And so we had one container component, which we called the player screen, and the player screen had all the state, such as what is the song that we are about to play and some other different things. And then we had the most interesting part, which was a player component that rendered nothing. However, it was listening to the lifecycle of the application and it was talking to the underlying native module to play things, you know? So we had this fake component, which was in fact just talking to the native side of things and then telling, you know, this is what you should play now, this is when you should stop, et cetera, et cetera. And we had this SVG, web view inside. And the relation was very simple. The player component was receiving events from the native side. And you have the animated.event function, which lets you map asynchronous callbacks that come from the native side, map it back to the animation that you have and you want in your component to happen. So when you map animated that event with an animation, for example, you can interpolate some values and then you can map that with the event. The most interesting part here is that the updates will not travel through the bridge. So animated is clever enough to understand that, you know, you want something to be mapped to an async update coming from the native side. So they will talk together on the native side without going through the bridge.
How you got the extra performance? By exploiting that? That's brilliant.
Yeah. So we were able to actually let the animation talk on the native side over the web view, yet still describe the whole relation of the UI by using the interpolation concept. So I don't know if what I'm telling you right now and if the people that are listening to us are now like, what is he even talking about? I strongly encourage everybody to open up my YouTube video where I'm talking about everything there. I have some interesting slides and examples and even video playback of how things work. I think that's where you will find all the answers, and I'll be happy to chat with everybody in a follow-up if, you know, this still becomes a good topic. One thing that I can suggest you, so I have a great friend of mine. He's from Mongolia, so I'm probably going to misspell his name, and I'm really sorry for that, but his name is Dulmandakh, and he's working for a startup that is doing a media playback service. And he actually met me at a conference, and he said that my tag was highly influential for him to figure out the architecture that he later did for his current startup. He's also a contributor to React Native. He knows a lot about Android, so it might be a great idea to invite him. And if that happens, just you know, ask him about the media player, and he will probably tell you everything about that and all the interesting topics about animations as well in that matter.
That sounds like it could be a great follow-up. Speaking of core contributors, that's actually how I know of you, because of the work you've put into React Native. I guess I'd be kind of interested to know what are your stories from being a core contributor. What happens in a day in the life, and what kind of stuff have you enjoyed putting towards the library?
Oh, there is a lot of them, you know. Not sure.
Yeah, I bet.
The habit of karaoke and conferencing, but that's definitely a good thing. It's a good question. Actually, I got a bit nostalgic right now because I started thinking about all these good times. Let's say that was like 3 or 4 years ago when I was just a very young developer and didn't have anything to worry about. Mm-hmm. That's when I traveled the world and I met all the people for the first time. That was a very, very interesting thing. The story how I got into contributing to React Native is very, I would say, it didn't start with APR. So I guess I might be in a in minority here. I was building React Native applications, and there was this problem with linking. That's why I was talking about auto linking before. There was the problem of linking modules, and so I figured that I actually teamed up with AliXeCurev, and we built something that was called RMPM. And RMPM was meant to replace both NPM and React Native CLI and provide you with the experience that you have today with auto-linking. That was the idea 4 years ago. We woke up one night or one morning and we were like, this is the library we're going to make. And so we spoke with Facebook, and they were so excited about it that they invited us to merge it right to the React Native repo. So we brought like thousands of code into React Native repo. That was, I guess, one of the biggest public additions to the repository itself at that time. So we moved everything that we built, we merged it into React Native CLI, and we started working on the React Native developer experience. So I guess my area of specialization as far as React Native core contributing goes is specifically everything that is related to the CLI. So that's how it started. And then we had some roadmap, we had some plans, but you know, we got busy with our lives and with, you know, all sorts of different things. And it turned out that being part of React Native repo, while it's cool to brag about, you know, being part of React Native code repository, it wasn't really beneficial from the development perspective. We're actually shipping less features, and we got really, really, scared about the massiveness of the React Native repo, you know? So as a result, we never completed some of the action items that we had. So the backstory here is that now React Native CLI is a separate project that we have extracted out as a part of the lean core. And I'm more than excited to be part of that project, because After extracting React Native CLI / RMPM out of the React Native repo to a separate project, we were able to finish some of the long outstanding bugs and feature requests. So when I was shipping AutoLinkIn, I was like, yes, after 4 years, the to-do item is finally done. The reason why we even brought RMPM to React Native in the first place is finally resolved. So, you know, it happened with like a 4 year long delay, and I'm now happy because that was the oldest outstanding item that I should have done. So that's regarding the CLI. The thing that people might be interested is to understand how I got into releases, because it seems to be so important and it seems to be so fundamental that, you know, like, Mike, how did you even do it? Because you're not working at Facebook.
Yes.
And I know. And you know, the story, the answer to that is like, nobody expects this answer anytime. Like people wonder like how that happened. And actually, I was the only one who wanted to do it. Three years ago.
That's such a good reason, isn't it?
Yeah. I mean, I was just this good guy that wanted to help. But you know, the thing is that, When back in the day, there used to be a Facebook, there used to be a group on Facebook called React Native Core Contributors, just for core contributors. And historically, Facebook used to release React Native themselves. Developers from Facebook were doing that every month. And one day, Martin Konitek, he used to work at Facebook. He's one of the, I would say, founders of React Native as far as, you know, the initial core team. He messaged everybody in the group, be like, hey, at Facebook, we would like to move around the responsibilities of the releases so that we can all contribute to it and that we can, you know, have some additional responsibilities, et cetera, et cetera. And somebody said, yeah, I can do it. After that, somebody else said they can do it. And I was probably the third or the fourth person to do it myself. I did it once, twice, and then after Martin was asking every month, and after fourth month, it was only me to say yes. And after like doing that release for like fifth time, I just told him, "How about we just stop asking? I'll just keep doing that myself." And I just stick around for so many years. I've been doing that since I remember. Actually became part of my daily routine to check if everything works properly for the developers. Then we started working on embracing the community. We started working on inviting more people to help. Because, you know, it's cool to be doing releases, but it's also tiring. And we, you know, speaking for all core contributors, we really, really value our work-life balance, and we want everybody to have some time to rest, and we don't want one person to be, you know, stressed by the importance of the release. So we started working on this releases repo under React Native organic community, where we tried to do everything in public. We open an issue for every release. We talk about every release. Now we talk about everything that we're doing that is needed to finish the release. And the promise here is that by doing that publicly, we can have other people to help us. So after we started doing that, then Lorenzo joined Twitter handle Kelset, or I'm very bad at pronouncing handles, so I'm not sure if that makes sense, but he's Lorenzo. And he that's his name. And so he joined us, and he did a lot of work for the general meta work around the community. He sorted out a lot of policies and a lot of rules, and he also helped with a lot of releases, and then he helped with just sorting out the process. So today it's still me doing that on a sort of daily basis. But we have additional contributors like Lorenzo that join us from time to time and help us work on, you know, the changelog or other important things such as blog posts. For example, for this particular release, 063, I didn't work much on the 062. On the 063, I did majority of work. I also wrote a blog post that is going to be published really soon with help of some contributors. And that's probably when I'm going to take some time off and somebody else is going to take 064. That's how we're going to try doing it. But I'm still the person that people can go to and ask something, because after doing it for so many years, you know, just Facebook team just knows they can count on me and I know I can count on them. So we have this funny and weird relationship where, you know, I don't work with them and they don't work with me, but we feel like part of just one family, and they can count on me, I can count on them. And we just kind of work on React Native as we were part of one team at one employer. But
it sounds like a really nice arrangement.
Yeah, that's cool. You know, you don't even know how many times people were asking me, like, Mike, do you work at Facebook? That's been like 3 years ago. Why don't you come work at Facebook? How about Facebook hires you? And then I said, you know, I can't do it because I have Callstack. And I said, maybe Facebook wants to buy Callstack. That was the joke. But, you know, it didn't catch the momentum. So I'm still here with my team.
Hey, put it on the podcast, maybe next week, get a call.
Yeah, if I get a call from Mark, you know, from US, we can talk.
Yeah. Can I just take you back just a little bit? I've got a little follow-up question. You said when you were working on RNPM, you just spoke to Facebook and they're like, yeah, bring it in. How did you get that conversation set up? If I, or one of our listeners, because it isn't going to be me, I'll be honest with you. If one of our listeners has come up with something fantastic that they want to implement, how do they just put a call into Facebook and get them to agree to it?
Well, today it is different. Back in the day, there was no process. There was no arrangements around that. I just messaged somebody on Twitter, I think, about, you know, some of the ideas that I had. My standard approach to contributing to projects like that is always try to be interactive in the issues, try to speak up what is it that you want to do, and then get interactive with other team core contributors on Twitter, Discord, wherever they are hanging out, try to get interactive, email them. I emailed some of the core contributors back in the day, you know, with some simple questions or things like, hey, can you bless my article? Hoping they will answer. It's not funny to read these things after 4 years, by the way. So that's what I would recommend. Back in the day, today, however, we have this discussions and proposal repository where, you know, in order to bring something in, you have to undergo a very formal process of submitting your RFC, technical approach, some diagrams, how everything should work. So today, we wouldn't be able to bring something like that in. Today the attitude is that we should actually bring things out to make React Native smaller. So, you know, things are changing.
That's a shame.
It's how it used to be. So if you want to get into being a contributor to React Native, now the only way is to send pull requests. That's the only way today. However,
that's corporate life, I guess, isn't it?
Yeah. I mean, now that we started talking about these things, I got really, really nostalgic, I have to say, because, you know, for me, and I really want to say that, because for me, React Native is just something like my family, you know, like when I was starting development, I was 20. When I started React, I was like 21 or 20, and I didn't have like a lot of friends and a lot of like things to do, and being able to interact with people all around the world was massive. Like I was 21 and I was speaking to developers from California, from Facebook, you know, from the company that they are telling us here in Poland, you know, this is the company you should go to, because if you go to Facebook or Google, you're all set. So I was talking with them, and for me, that was like something I couldn't believe myself. And so, you know, I met a lot of people. I travel around the world. I've been to many conferences. I had so many great activities with people in this community. And so I feel like these people are my family. If I were about to quit React Native, like tomorrow, I would be missing a massive part of myself. Obviously, it's less of these things today because we are all grown up. We have our things to do. I have my I have a girlfriend now. I have a business. There is quarantine, stay at home. So there is less of these things. But every time they come to React Native EU in Wrocław, I'm like almost crying and being like, "Hello, welcome back. It's good to see you guys." Yeah, it's a very, very nice community where we can, you know, socialize with people and become a better developer. I have to say, in my opinion, one of the most welcoming and friendly communities out there. I'm very happy to be part of it. So glad that you asked me about a bit of history, because I always love, you know, bringing these memories back.
Well, that echoes my experience with the community as well. I think it is a really nice group of people on the whole. And there are always problems with the way stuff gets assembled. But over the last 3 or 4 years, the way that React Native has improved itself is astronomical, in my opinion. So when I first started a few years ago, I had the linking issues and stuff that you were just describing. And today, while I'm using it, it's just night and day different. It just works so much more fluidly, so much more efficient. It's consistently set out to improve itself. And that is down, of course, to the people who contribute to the package. And I think that's really, really fantastic.
Yeah, I totally agree. Actually, I'm seeing the same pattern by looking at the clients that we work with. You know, it used to be all startups. Today, it's enterprises and you know, massive businesses that just go React Native all in. They invest in everything. They want to take everything out of React Native, including, you know, tiny little features such as, you know, like brownfield setup where you replace just little part of your screen with React Native just for the ability to share some of the styling concepts across different platforms. So, you know, I'm really happy about that. And, you know, because I kind of got tired of building just simple apps with React Native after 4 years, it makes me happy because I can get a bit more challenged into like, what is it that we can build with React Native next? A great example here is a hackathon at BMW that we went to. They hosted a hackathon last year about innovating on their platform. And not many people know that actually the system that is running on BMW called iDrive, the infotainment system in the middle of the car, has the ability to run JavaScript. And they call it online apps. Just because they download them from the internet. Trust me, the SDK is really bad. Like, yeah, like you don't want to work with that. when they invited me to the hack, and I was like, what are we going to build? I'm so excited. They told me, Mike, you're not going to build anything because they will be rolling you security permissions for 1 week. When they do it, you will be waiting for the build of your app to be loaded to the device in another hour. And then you will have to go for the source code to understand the SDK. So I told them, okay, so you know, guys, what I'm going to do, I'm just going to create React Native target for this platform. And so I did a React Native target for BMW iDrive. So you were able to actually write React component and share a web, mobile with whatever you had on the iDrive infotainment system. So you can actually share pieces of your code to your car. So, you know, a lot of crazy things that you can do with React Native. And maybe if there is anybody listening to us from Mercedes, you guys want to, you know, catch up on this ultimate fight between you both. Happy to talk about that.
Nice.
That sounds incredible. So can I write something for an iDrive?
Well,
will it play Doom?
Well, unfortunately,
I love it.
We built Tetris actually for the iDrive.
Oh, really?
So I think, you know, you have this knob in the center of the console. You can turn it.
Yeah.
So you can just treat it as your ultimate Tetris controller and do all sorts of other things. Reality here is that, you know, it is a very, very nice platform, but it has a very old SDK. I don't think they did anything with the things that we did for them, because that was just a hackathon thing. And then I think they are moving with Flutter. So at the end of the day, the upcoming iterations of the infotainment in cars in like 10 years will be running something else. But it's very, very important to understand that in the automotive industry, the release life cycles are taking 8 years between every iteration of the car. And then before they even release the first generation of the car, they have to freeze the technology 3 years before. So at the time of the release, the technology is already outdated. So I told them that React Native actually would solve a lot of your problems because you could target all of those crappy systems back to 2000 where you had E46. They were like, yeah, but you know, there is those petrol heads that you speak to, and then there's those managers that look at something else. And so,
makes sense. Back when functional programming was making its resurgence, I found it really interesting that a lot of people were moving over there, and it almost felt like it was on hype. And I didn't really understand the power of functional programming until I learned Elixir. Elixir is a functional programming language. It's built on the Erlang virtual machine, and it really does some interesting things and makes you build apps in a different way. But what's really fascinating about it is the speed of the applications, the ability to distribute work easily, and just how it manages the functional programming and all of the nice things about it so that you don't have to worry about side effects and a lot of the other things that come out of functional programming. Plus, pattern matching in Elixir is a killer feature. If you're looking for a new language that you want to learn that is going to make a difference for you and give you the opportunity to challenge some of your thinking and find a new way of doing it, Elixir is a great way to go. And we have a podcast now on Elixir called Elixir Mix. And you can find that at elixirmix.com. I kind of want to go back just for a minute to the idea of contributing. And I really like the idea of them taking stuff out of React Native and kind of spinning it off into its own arena. Because then you get the core stuff that you need. It only has to, you know, it reduces your app size. It does a lot of things for you. But yeah. So can you contribute code deletions? I'm just wondering.
Can I do what?
Can you go in and contribute code deletions?
Yeah. Yeah. This is, I'm not sure if you can do much of these anymore, but last year, there was a Excel file where we had modules that were pending removal or pending extraction to React Native community, and right. They were just waiting for people to save them. So I took that list and I came to my developers at CallStack, and I was like, who wants to be React Native core contributor? Raise your hand. Me, you know, everybody was like, yeah. They will probably tell you a different story, but let's assume they were excited. And so I told them that, you know, if you want to get into the React Native development lifecycle, it's never been that easy. Because all you have to do is just extract the code out, paste it to a separate repo, add a bit of testing, refresh the API, and you're all set. And that's how we ended up with a lot of new libraries, such as React Native WebView, React Native Async Storage, which is the one that we maintain. There is the slider. Camera used to be actually outside anyway from the very beginning. So we got a lot of different modules that were created just because we removed or extracted out less popular pieces to not have the overhead of maintaining them. Because we realized that spending time on maintaining something that we don't use or something that Facebook doesn't use internally is just not good from the maintenance point of view long term. I mean, everything that makes React Native smaller is always welcome. Like, you know, JavaScript developers, we're crazy about the size. So the smaller we can make something, the better.
Yep.
I'd like to ask you just a couple of practical app creation questions. And I'd just like to get your opinion on it, really, because we've had a lot of discussion over the last few weeks about different UI libraries. And I've been playing with a few here. So I've had a look at UI Kitten and Native Base, which are quite big ones that have come up. Now, I'd be interested to know, if you were making an app, and I'm sure you are doing, would you tend to pull in like a third-party UI library, or do you like to just roll every component and style it yourself?
Depends. If we were about to pull in a third-party library, that would be our own React Native Paper, which is a material design library. Kind of like Native Base, in terms of like the way it looks. The difference here is that our library It's like 100% compliant with material design spec from Google. It was our idea from the very beginning that we make it pixel perfect. So we will not find anything that looks off, any animations that look not native, or any elements that don't look like material design. So we know the library inside out. It's ours, and it's based on our principles and our way of structuring the layouts. So we would be happy to use React Native Paper and our custom version of it. For projects that are very small and simple, we don't use it. We just build something very quick ourselves. We have a lot of cases where we build a custom UI library for a client based on Paper. So Paper, as I said, is a material design library, but we did it in a modular way so that you can actually take the building blocks of Paper and create your own UI library by changing the way it looks. So if you are in for doing that, you can take the theme provider that we have inside, which lets you provide theme throughout the app tree by using context and a bit of other helpers that we use on a daily basis. So the takeaway is that we often build our own based on what we have internally already, which is Paper. So the answer is React Native Paper is what we use.
That definitely makes sense if it's the library you own, 100%.
Well, if you try it, you can let us know what you think. I'll be keen to hear your feedback on that. We actually also have React Native iOS Kit, which is exactly the opposite of material design, which is just Coca interface that we know from iOS. I wouldn't say it's production ready yet. It's more of a, it is now pending major work. We are working on it to bring it to its glory. We are about to launch some marketing campaign on that. But you know, if you're interested in getting the iOS looking interface that you want, because we as React Native developers, we don't have it by default, then this is also the library that you may wanna look at.
Yeah, that sounds really cool. Because React Native Paper, I do actually know it, and it looks like the perfect Android type layout. Looks fantastic. All the material stuff is in there, exactly like you say. But yeah, on an iPhone, I don't know if it looks quite as native as, say, native bases UI components would.
Yeah. Well, if I remember native base right, they have the ability to switch the theme between iOS one and the Android one. So we can
actually, yeah, I think they do.
On and yeah, for different things. With Paper, we just couldn't make it because of like all sorts of different material design specialized components that we just didn't see any place on iOS. However, on Android, on iOS, we have this iOS kit, which is not one-to-one compatible. So if you are building an app and you're interested in just having very, very dedicated UI, you will have to write your primitives. But if you're okay with having material design on iOS, which is what Google is doing from the very beginning, and Apple doesn't seem to care about that, then, you know, Paper is your way to go.
Absolutely. I'm going to give it a go. I'll let you know. Thanks for the recommendation.
All right.
Yep. Absolutely. All right. We're kind of getting toward the end of the scheduled time. Mike, if people want to find you online, where do they find you?
My Twitter, mytwitter.com, nickname Rabau, I think, but just check the pics because I came up with my handle when I didn't speak English, and I don't know how to spell it or pronounce it, so nobody knows it. It's always a challenge for everybody. You can find me on Twitter. That's the best way to reach out to me. I'm also on Discord. If you're in the React Native Reactive Flux, I think that's how you say it. I'm also there. You can find me by my handle. You can find me. You can message CallStack. Contact form if you have any questions. That's also how you can reach out to me. I also have Instagram, but it's all about cars, so that doesn't really matter.
It's all about cars.
Yeah.
What kind of cars?
I actually have a tattoo on my hand that I just finished. You know, with a suspension component right here. So I'm kind of addicted to that. Special help myself.
Nice. So what's your dream car? What's the one you want?
I don't know. I'm not thinking that far. I'm currently sick. to get Mercedes AMG GTR. That's the one I'm like dreaming about every night and day. But you know, I'm just happy with my Beamer. I have actually two Beamers that I'm like babying all the time. So I'm taking it slow. I'm not in a hurry unless the EU regulations kill naturally aspirated engines. That's when I will have to hurry up and get mine.
Yeah.
In the US, you don't have this problem. You just have whatever straight pipe engines and you produce everything. And I don't think, you know, they have any plans to limit the amount of these on the streets. In Europe, I think 10, 20, 30 years, it's going to be all electric. So we got to hurry up.
Yep. All right, good deal. Well, let's do some picks. James, do you want to do some picks first?
Yeah, I'd be happy to. I'd like to recommend a YouTube channel this week. I don't know how I haven't found this before now. It's called I Like to Make Stuff. And I also like to make stuff. I sold one of my cars last week, and I've got a big amount of space in my garage now. So now feels like the right time to make an arcade machine. So I'm going to kick that project off later this week. And I found quite a few videos on that YouTube channel with somebody doing exactly that. And the other stuff he's got on there, really interesting, really nicely explained as well. So yeah, I would recommend that.
Nice. Yeah, I use YouTube for a lot of my projects too. So I wind up building stuff or working on my car and it's like, where's that part go? And yeah, it's awesome.
Yeah, well, that's the best source if you want to learn something, right? Like weird noise coming out of suspension or, you know, like how do I replace this and that?
Yeah, cool. I'll throw in a couple of picks here. My first pick is going to be React Native Remote Conf. We do have a few cool folks showing up to speak. And one of them, I talked to Christopher Chadeau. He's not working in React Native anymore, but I thought it'd be fun to just have him show up, have people ask him questions about, you know, what it was like when they were first building React Native and things like that, and his work on React as well. And so he's agreed to come and do a Q&A. I'm picking speakers right now, so we'll probably have a few more, probably a couple of these guys here. So I'm pretty excited about it. It's going to be at the end of July. And my other pick is I've been listening to a book on Audible called Warbreaker. It's by Brandon Sanderson, and it's a fantasy novel. I'm really, really enjoying that. And it's been terrific. And then the last pick I have is we did an episode, and it should be out before this episode goes live. We did an episode on the iFreaks podcast, which is focused around iOS development with Swift and Objective-C, mostly Swift these days. And I talked to Steve Young, who's an app store optimization expert, you know, so for getting your app marketed and things like that. And anyway, it was terrific. He had a lot of great ideas. If you're kind of looking for that next app that you want to build that might make you some money, he kind of talks about how to figure out what app to build in the first place. And then we go through the process of, okay, and now that we have this app, what do we do to market it? And it was a fun chat. So I'm going to pick that as well. Mike, do you have some picks for us?
Yeah, I do. So I have just two of them, three of them. So the first one is this YouTube presentation of mine that I did at the React Day Berlin, which is about building animation structure, you know, thinking about building animations all together. And that is an interesting thing that you may want to see. And then after that, I would recommend just looking at the React Native Animated Library, especially the Reanimated Library. Because my talk used to be about animated. Now we have reanimated version 2, which brings a whole new API and a whole new set of different interactions. So I would say the first pick is going to be my talk on React Native Berlin. The second one is going to be the reanimated that's been recently released with a brand new API that is much easier and much more challenging. It's opening it's opening many more opportunities for you. That's going to be my second pick. I just realized that I got a lot of clicks. The third one is going to be a React Native EU conference that you actually, Charles reminded me to say about, because we are one of these conferences that is still happening this year. It's happening remotely, so you can go and visit our website. That's where you will find all the details. We got some speakers. We got a lot of interesting speakers from React Native and React Native community. And the last pick is going to be the React Native release. That should be out at the time of this podcast being published. But if it's not, then give it like a few days and visit the GitHub issue that is linked here in a podcast where you will find all the details and an update if it's app or if it's not. So that's going to be all from me.
Awesome. Well, thanks for coming, Mike. This was a lot of fun.
Thank you. Thank you for the invite. Happy to be here. I'm hoping that it's not going to be the last time I've been here. And I'm hoping that I'll appear here sooner than 2 years, as it was the case this time, I think.
Yep. Awesome. All right, folks, we'll wrap up. Until next time, Max out.
Bandwidth for this segment is provided by CacheFly, the world's fastest CDN. Deliver your content fast with CacheFly. Visit CacheFly.com to learn more.